The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're coming to you live today, wherever you are in the world, from the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College in Edmond, Oklahoma. I'm not Stephen Flurry, your regular host. I'm Brent Nuchtigall, filling in for him as he travels to the United States. I just flew in this week, from Israel. And what a world we live in, a world that we can see so many events taking place and come across our television screens or on the internet or we hear on the radio so much that actually has prophetic significance to it. The world news that we see all over this planet has prophetic significance. And today, I want to take some time to talk about the extremely sobering events taking place in the Middle East. We may be broadcasting from Oklahoma, but I just can't get past what's taking place in that pivotal region of the Middle East, and especially in regards to Yemen. Now, Yemen is a far-off place. It might not grab your attention to draw you in, especially in this world that we live in, dazed by entertainment and pleasure. That is in the West, especially in the West. There are plenty of parts of this world that aren't dazed by that false reality created by pleasure seeking. There's plenty of places in the world, especially in the Middle East, where life is pretty real. It's about as real as it comes, where life and death for an individual are as close as a moment apart. Well, Bible prophecy indicates that it doesn't matter where you live in the world right now, life is going to become vividly real, as vividly real to those people that are living in Yemen today. And that's why we must talk about what has taken place over this past week in Yemen. Stephen Flurry, your regular host, talked about some instances of this back earlier this week. But we're going to there's been some events since that time that warrant us revisiting this pivotal area of Yemen, and I'm going to let Fox News set this up with the story from yesterday.
So breaking news overnight, a big story that we need to bring to you. The U.S. has retaliated against Yemen after yet another attack on a Navy ship, an escalation in this area. Tomahawk cruise missiles targeting multiple radar sites along the Red Sea that took part in two failed attacks on the USS Mason. Those missiles launched by a U.S. destroyer and hitting areas controlled by Iranian-backed Houthi rebels. Leland Vittert, live at the White House with more on this disturbing development. Leland, tell us what's happening.
Well, good morning, Martha. And as you said, Iran is really the key player here. They have been harassing U.S. ships not only in the Red Sea, but also near the Straits of Hormuz for months now. Their rebels fired on U.S. ships during the week. They fired again. They were warned that U.S. captains have the right to protect themselves, and that is exactly what happened overnight as the Navy launched multiple Tomahawk cruise missiles to take out the radar sites that guided those original attacks. According to the Pentagon, they hit and destroyed the radar positions, which would make attacks on U.S. ships more difficult. As we have seen, though, the Houthis are very well equipped by Iran. It was U.S. Navy warships that forced Iranian freighters carrying weapons to the Houthis to turn around. For all intent and purposes, the U.S. and Iran are really in a proxy war over Yemen. And take a look at the map about how strategically important Yemen is. It is the Saudis that are bombing in Yemen using U.S. weapon systems, U.S. bombs, backed by the United States, helped by the United States, and Iran, of course, which is backing the Houthi rebels. Control there of the Strait of Mandeb that leads up to the Red Sea is at stake. And then also, Martha, huge implications for anti-terror operations against Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula at stake as well in Yemen.
There are so many foreign developments that are going on in the world right now. And with all of this attention on the election, really important that we keep on top of this too. Leland, thank you very much.
Two times now. Now a response. Yes.
Okay, she is right. that there is so much hoopla surrounding the presidential elections here in the United States, and yet there is so much going on around the world, and it's important that we watch these events. Now, seen in isolation, we have a militia in a war-torn country in Yemen, far off in the Middle East, that fired on the United States. The United States has since retaliated against them, taking out a few radar posts that help guide those missiles to the American ship. It might not seem like much of a story, but these actions taking place in Yemen and critically this area of the Red Sea are extremely important in understanding the immediate future of world events. And as I said before, Stephen Flory talked about this on Sunday after the first attack or attempted attack, a missile fired from the land of Yemen, Houthi-controlled territory. Again, Houthi is a group of a Shiite militia that is backed and supported by Iran against a United States warship. That's what took place on Sunday. Well, the United States did nothing in retaliation, so the Houthi fired again, as you would expect. And then the United States decided to retaliate proportionally, as they call it, and taking out some of these radar stations. But really, what the United States is really a sideshow in a way to what is going on in the Red Sea and in Yemen. We must understand that these attacks are not really about the United States in the end. Now, I find it interesting. I found that clip yesterday on YouTube. And as I scrolled down to look at some of the comments, I don't normally look at too many comments on YouTube, but this time I did. And I found that most of them were from Americans saying, "Why? What are we even doing around Yemen? Who cares about Yemen? Why don't we just get out of there, let them do what they want? This is not our fight." Now, that's definitely a contention that you'll hear from both candidates that are running for election here in the United States. And it is a sentiment that is echoed by a lot of people. In fact, the people are pushing these days, why are we even involved in the Middle East? Why are we near Yemen? Why are our ships in the Red Sea? So we need to ask the question, what would happen if the United States was not protecting the Red Sea for any type of maritime traffic? What would happen? If they remove themselves from off the coast of Yemen, what would happen if America retreats from protecting maritime safety through these areas? What happens when they no longer care about protecting the safe passage of trade through this area? Well, obviously, it means another power is going to have to protect trade and travel through these parts, or at least seek to dominate this region to control the flow of goods. Now, if we need to really understand that if America is not protecting these waterways and maintaining the peace, then is the next security guarantor going to be as benevolent as the United States has done for the past 60 years protecting these straits? Or are they going to seek their own will in maintaining control of this strategic waterway? And that's why we need to watch Yemen, and that's why it concerns you. Wherever you are in the world, Yemen seems like a far-off place, yet it is so strategically significant, it affects you. I was filling up my car, full of gas, petrol, here on Coltrane and Waterloo yesterday afternoon, and I look up and I see that I'm paying $1.99 per gallon. So you can divide that by four if you want to know how much that is per liter, 50 cents a liter. And that's absolutely nothing. Everybody else in the world would love those prices for gas. But I was sitting there, or standing there, filling up my tank and thinking about what has happened in Yemen, and knowing from biblical prophecy that that number that I'm paying for, up on the board there, that I'm paying for gas is going to change. It's going to change real soon. And for people where they're more reliant on Middle Eastern oil, it's going to change far more drastically than here, even in the United States. And it is going to result in not just higher oil prices, but something much more drastic, as we'll cover later on in the program. Now, Gerald Flory, he wrote, the editor-in-chief of the Trumpet magazine, he wrote an article earlier this year which provides extremely important analysis of what's going on in the Middle East right now and how it's going to affect the whole world. And he talks about Yemen in that article. The article is entitled "Mediterranean Battle Escalating into World War III." Sounds crazy, is what happened, or does what happened in Yemen just this past week, does it have an effect in the future, leading to something as drastic as World War III? Will it? Now, you need to read this article. It's located on thetrumpet.com. You can just type in, again, Mediterranean battle escalating into World War III, into the search browser there, and it will, or the search form there, and it will come up for you to read. And really, everything that's going on in the Middle East right now has a lot to do with the Mediterranean Sea. Even Europe's response to what's happening in the Middle East has a lot to do with the Mediterranean Sea. And Yemen sits at one of those pivotal entrances to the Mediterranean Sea, the southern entrance to the Mediterranean Sea. We talk a lot about the Suez Canal and how important that is strategically, that that is controlled by at least a friendly or unbiased world power that allows travel to continue through that of extremely important exports, oil being the most important one of those, especially to Europe. But really, the Yemen is the southern entrance to the Red Sea. And if you can't get into the Red Sea from the south, the Suez Canal is not of any importance. And the strait that is just on the southern tip, or the southeastern tip, southwestern tip of Yemen, the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, just 18 miles across. Just north of that is where this American ship was fired upon by these Houthis. Now, when we come back, we're going to make sense of what exactly the Houthis are doing firing on American ships in the Red Sea. This is not an analysis you're going to hear anywhere else. So please stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
The prophet Daniel wrote about a future confrontation between a power in the north and the king of the south. We are now in the time when these two major powers are quickly rising. The king of the south is stirring up trouble even today. It is critical that you know the identity of this prophesied power. For more, request our booklet, King of the South. Visit thetrumpet.com and click the literature tab to select your free booklet.
The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're talking about Yemen here and the recent actions by the Houthi militia that is sponsored by Iran firing on American warships in the southern Red Sea off the coast of Yemen. Now, we're talking about Yemen, one of the most strategically important countries in the world, and it has grown in importance over the past 2 years. Why? Because of the resurgence of this Houthi militia that is allied with Iran. Now, in January, back in 2015, this rebel group overthrew the pro-American Yemeni government that America had been supporting, because for 20, 30 years, they had maintained free maritime traffic through the Red Sea. They had been friendly with the United States. And yet these Houthi rebels, as they have been called, they captured the capital city of Sana'a back in January 2015. And they were chanting, death to America, death to Israel, the very same chants that Iran uses, the same battle cries, really, that Iran uses. And this stunned many people at the time in Europe, and it terrified many more of the moderate Arab states that really depend on free access through the Red Sea for all their trade to reach Europe. They rely on unlimited access to the Red Sea. It worried many of them that Iran was now a gatekeeper to the southern portion of the Red Sea. Now, with this latest attack on of Iran on America, we can't allow ourselves to get caught up in just what America's response is or is going to be. And I looked at the news this morning, and I was just really kind of taken back by the gamut of articles that were out talking about whether the United States is going to get more involved in Yemen or not, and we don't want our soldiers to get more involved in Yemen or not, or in the future. And they weren't focusing on the bigger event here. Really, the United States is the fact that their ships were fired upon isn't the story here. It is that Iran is trying to dominate right now maritime travel through the Red Sea. That is the big story. It's not that the United States responded to the Houthi rebels. It is that Iran has mobilized its proxy to now threaten anyone that travels through the Red Sea, that they know that they can be attacked by Iran. And as anybody travels through the Southern Red Sea from now on, they're going to have to make that calculus. Is it safe for our ships to travel through there? And they will have to make the calculus as well. Can we rely on the United States in the future to be the continual guarantor of this area for safe maritime passage? This isn't just a random attack in a random area on America and an American ship. This is a brazen Iranian attack for control of the Red Sea. That is the story here. And that is not the story that you'll hear anywhere else. Now, if we look at some of the history of this Red Sea gateway, it's proven really critically important throughout the past 500 years, really. The Red Sea, we know it really, or the Suez Canal, that didn't get built till 1869. But even before that, you had a lot of trade that was taking place, even by Portuguese and the Dutch explorers as they went over to the East Indies or Indonesia, the spice trade from India, and they used to bring back a lot of their supplies. They would travel up through the Bab el-Mandeb Strait near off the coast of Yemen, up through the Red Sea, and they would get to the Suez before the canal was there, and they would offload all their cargo onto caravans pulled by camels and such, and they would make an overland trek to the southern portion of the Mediterranean between Israel and Egypt, as it sits on the map today, and then they would unload their cargo into ships and then sail into Europe. Now, around about the 15th century, the Suez Canal, or the Suez area, this trade route kind of lost its importance because of the invention, or not the invention of the steamship, that came later, but the discovery of the Cape of Good Hope in southern Africa. And that meant that European explorers and European traders, they could use the amazingly fast winds in the southern ocean there below South Africa, and they could circumnavigate South Africa on their ships, and that would save offloading the cargo and taking the land route. But then once the Suez Canal opened in 1869, suddenly the distance for ship travel between European and Asian ports was slashed in half to two-thirds. It cut down on the travel time quite a lot. Instead of traveling between Kuwait and Liverpool, taking a distance of 13,500 miles all the way around the Cape of Good Hope, that halved to about 7,000 miles. So you can see that things like that could really increase trade. The transit costs wouldn't be as much, and it became a really critical area of importance for especially Europe to access goods from the East. Now, if they don't get their spices, if they don't get some of their foodstuffs and tapestries, it's not going to be the end of the world. But when oil became really the most important commodity on the market in the 1930s, when oil began to flow from the Persian Gulf on the other side of the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, if you go around to the Persian Gulf on the other side of Saudi Arabia, in 1930s, that began to flow to Europe and the United States, and all that came through the Suez Canal. And oil was needed by the growing economies in Europe and the United States. So they needed that Suez Canal to stay open. Oil became the chief commodity driving economic growth and also military preparedness around the world. If you don't have oil, yes, you can't drive your cars, but you also can't operate your military. So because of that, ensuring the stability of the Red Sea between these two gates, the Suez Canal in the north and the Bab el-Mandeb Strait in the south, became critical for global trade and economic activity and for maintaining the peace of the world. This is what a Yemeni colonel, Hussein al-Yadomi, wrote for the USA War College back in 1991 about the Bab el-Mandeb Strait. He said, "One of the primary duties of the international community is to act as an alert guardian alert Guardian to ensure that the Bab-el-Mandeb Strait is available to all navigation and at all times. This Yemeni colonel back, this is 24 years ago, 25 years ago now, said, it's critically important that we're very active and alert to maintain the free travel and free navigation of vessels through this strait. And that's what the West have done for the past 60 years. Britain and then the United States, they've tried to ensure that the Red Sea has remained open. And they've done that by having their own ships there and by supporting relatively Western-friendly nations such as Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and Yemen. Now, of course, that policy has a drawback in the volatile Middle East when governments can change quite fast. And when you had the Arab Spring that ripped through the Middle East in 2011, 2012, there were a number, well, the only governments that fell really were friendly to the United States, be it mainly in Egypt, that occupied the, that controlled the Suez Canal. And even, it's interesting, when you look at the Muslim Brotherhood, when they got in power in 2012 there in Egypt, they threatened to close down the transit of the Suez Canal. But even in Yemen as well, it is dangerous, this policy of supporting governments in a hope that they would stay friendly to you. Now, it has worked for a while. And yet, what we saw in 2015 is the Houthis take over Yemen. A group that is not friendly to the United States, a group that is funded and supported and directed by Iran. Now, again, if we're talking about these events of the past week, it's not about the United States. It's about Iran declaring its sovereignty over the waters of the Red Sea. That's what's happening. Iran is on the march, as we've said, for 20 years. And that march has picked up in the last 5 years, yes, because of American withdrawal. That's why it's happening. It's happening in the vacuum created by the United States getting out of the way. But really, don't get sidetracked again about what Americans' response will be, whether America's going to get involved in Yemen. This is about Iran pursuing its own policy. Now, many people have been saying, and even many people in the United States government have been saying, that the Houthis are separate from Iran. Of course they're going to say that. They just conducted a nuclear deal with Iran in the hope that it would moderate Iran slightly. And obviously that's not what we've seen. So they obviously don't want people to connect the Houthis to Iran. But there's plenty of proofs to show that the Houthis are supported by Iran and that they are not separated from Iran. If they were separated from Iran and Iran wasn't directing them, why has Iran been caught 3 times in the past 2 years sending shiploads, containers full of weapons to the Houthis? If Iran wasn't in charge or directing the Houthis, then why did Iran rejoice when the Houthis took the capital of Sana'a back in 2015, saying that they, Iran, now controlled 4 capitals in the Middle East, Tehran, Beirut in Lebanon, Damascus in Syria, and now Sana'a in Yemen? Why did they say at the time that they were now the Sultan of the Red Sea once the Houthis took over? That's what Iran was saying. Not the Houthis are the Sultan of the Red Sea. We are the Sultan of the Red Sea. Now, bringing it up to this current time, let's have a look at the weaponry that was used in these attacks on the American ships. This is an article by Max Boot from Commentary Magazine. This is yesterday. He recaps a little bit here. He says, on Sunday, 3 cruise missiles were fired from the Houthi-controlled coast of Yemen at the USS Mason, an American destroyer in international waters in the Red Sea. On Wednesday, it happened again. 2 more cruise missiles. Now, this isn't a bunch of guys running around with AK-47s. Yes, the Houthis have AK-47s, but they have cruise missiles that can be fired at ships that are crossing through the Red Sea. Now, in order to protect itself, the Mason launched, this is according to the Naval Institute Proceedings, 2 Standard Missile 2s, SM-2s, and a single evolved Sea Sparrow missile to intercept the 2 missiles, and the ship also used its anti-ship missile decoy. So these were heading towards the ship. this is serious business. This is what Max Boot writes. He says, as I wrote on Monday, it is in fact an act of war. On Thursday, President Obama, that is yesterday, authorized retaliation. The USS Nitz, another destroyer, fired Tomahawk cruise missiles that demolished three radar stations in Yemen that apparently had been used to control the cruise missiles. This was entirely fitting and appropriate, but is it sufficient, he asks. Then he says, to answer that question, we need to dig a little deeper and ask how this ragtag bunch called the Houthis got their hands on anti-ship cruise missiles. If reports are accurate, they employed the C-802 cruise missiles made by China. This is the very same missile that Hezbollah used in 2006 to attack and cripple an Israeli corvette off the coast of Lebanon. What a coincidence, he writes. The Houthis in Yemen have similar missiles as Hezbollah in Lebanon. The two groups are at opposite ends of the Middle East. What could possibly connect them? In a word, Iran. And then he continues to write here. He goes on to say that the Houthis might not have had the experience to operate such technical equipment or missiles, and it might have been that there was some Iranian forces that have had experience with using these, actually there firing them, controlling them. Again, this is not like a couple of rockets fired by Hamas into Israeli territory where they let them go up in the air and wherever they land, they land. These were radar-guided cruise missiles. He continues to write, yet the administration continues to cling to the myth that the Houthis aren't really Iranian clients. The New York Times reported yesterday, quote, American intelligence officials believe that the Houthis receive significantly less support from Iran than the Saudis and other Persian Gulf nations have charged. That's what the New York Times says. And then he writes, that spin is a lot less tenable now that the Houthis are firing Iranian-provided C-802s. These are not trinkets that Tehran hands out to just anyone. So they're using weapons that Iran has proven to use before, high-tech weapons. So if we look at something else as well, if Iran is not behind this, then why did it send two warships to Yemen yesterday? Two of their own warships on the heels of the American attack on these stations in Yemen, these Houthi control radar stations. This is from Fox News yesterday. Iran deployed two warships off Yemen, threatening to further escalate tensions after the United States fired Tomahawk cruise missiles, destroying three coastal radar sites in Houthi-controlled territory, a U.S. official confirmed to Fox. Iran sent the ships to the Gulf of Aden, that's just on the other side of the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, one of the world's most vital shipping routes, to, quote, protect trade vessels from piracy. Really? To protect trade vessels from piracy. That's why Iran sent their destroyers right next to where these attacks took place a day after the United States fired back. Now, Iran wouldn't be as crazy right now to try and instigate a full-blown war against the United States. But we've seen what they're doing in the Persian Gulf, firing here, firing there, to the point that it wouldn't be surprising if the United States, under a different administration, or even this current administration, decides it's not in their interest to be there. But again, if Iran is not connected to the Houthis, why did Iran send two warships a day after these events took place? Fox News is told one of the Iranian ships carries the same type of anti-ship missile the Houthis were suspected of firing this week. On the same ship is the same type of cruise missile that was fired from Houthi territory. White House Deputy Press Secretary Eric Schultz said the U.S. would not speculate on the Iranians' attention. Okay, now there's another story as well we need to think about to prove that Iran is behind this. Just last month, this is a story we reported on in the Trumpet.com, in an article entitled Iran's New United Shia Liberation Army. They announced this army at the end of August that they are going to produce a separate army from the Quds Force, from the IRGC, from their normal military. And this is what former Brigadier General Muhammad Ali Falahi told the Maskrig news agency. He said that this USLA, or this new army, is going to have three areas of focus: Syria, Iraq, and Yemen. So this is a month ago. We've got a new army on the scene, and we're going to be focusing on Yemen. And then, as we wrote in this article a month ago, it said this article says all three countries are rife with sectarian violence. All three represent the front line in the regional power struggle between the Middle East and Sunni and Shia Muslims. And then it says that the Houthis are not tied as closely to Iran as many Shiites in Syria, and that may be the case, but that could now change. That's what we wrote a month ago. Yes, they aren't as close as the Shiite militias tearing up Iraq right now for Iran, or as the Damascus regime in Syria, as they answer to Iran. The Houthis weren't as controlled by Iran in the past, yet that might change now. That's what we wrote a month and a half ago. And what we have seen is a drastic change. The Houthis are using weaponry, sophisticated weaponry, received from Iran to fire on U.S. warships in the Red Sea. We continue to write, the arrival of the USLA in Yemen looks set to intensify the conflict. That's what we said a month ago. In effect, forcing the Houthis into deeper cooperation with Iran. This is a quote now from a Yemeni affairs analyst, and this is what she told Voice of America a month ago. The formation of such an army would only exacerbate the conflict in Yemen. Houthis are one of the most organized groups in the Yemen war, and any additional support would empower them on the ground. So Iran announces this new army a month ago, and they said that we're going to focus on Yemen. Is this latest attack connected to that? Are the Houthis funded, directed, supported by Iran? Now, whoever says the Houthis are not aligned with and directed by Iran is simply not being truthful. And Iran has said as much themselves in the past. The Houthis' takeover in Yemen wasn't a grassroots revolution. It was a deliberate attempt by Iran to conquer the Red Sea. They want to conquer the Red Sea. They want to push westward across North Africa, and they know they need to control that powerful waterway. So they have mobilized the Houthis. And this is a strategy, actually, that is revealed in the Book of Daniel. This Iranian strategy that we're watching right now. The fact that Iran has fired, really, on the United States in the Red Sea is part of a strategy that is outlined in the Book of Daniel. And when we come back, we're going to take a look at that prophecy once more so that you can understand, when you see events like this, what's really going on, and that you're not sidetracked by whether the United States stays or goes. You can see that this is a part of Iran's grand strategy. A strategy, again, that was prophesied in the Book of Daniel. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show.
Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States, one in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror, their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening. And what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe, and it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South. What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. As a recap, I'd just like to go through a couple of points. In 2011, we told you to watch Yemen because of its key strategic location. In early 2015, the Houthis took control of the capital of Yemen, and we told you that Iran is starting to implement its plan to conquer the Red Sea passage. And now this week, Iran declares its intent to control shipping through the Red Sea by firing at a vessel that was traveling through freely right through there. How could we know that these things were going to happen? Now, as astounding as it may sound, the prophet Daniel foretold what happened, what is happening in Yemen. And he existed 2,600 years ago. He even mentions names of individual nations along the Red Sea corridor that are going to be aligned with Iran in the future. Some of them aren't aligned with Iran right now. Yet, because they're aligned with Iran, as the prophecies say, and we can tell the location or where they sit on a map, we can look and deduce what Iran's strategy is. And these prophecies are found in Daniel 11, verse 40, even as that promo before was in the break there was talking about. I'm just going to read Daniel 11, verse 40. It says, "And at the time of the end, the time we're living in right now, shall the king of the south push at him." A king, kingdom, somebody that stand up and is going to exert control over a region is going to push at him. That is this next character in the king of the north. That's who this king of the south is pushing at. "Shall come against him like a whirlwind with chariots and with horsemen with many ships, and he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over." So again, this concerns the Middle East. It concerns what's happening in Yemen. You have two powers mentioned here, the king of the south, which we've said for 25 years. Gerald Flory, the editor-in-chief of this of the Trumpet magazine, has located or directed our attention to Iran, leading radical Islam as this king of the south, and that there is a time coming in the end when the king of the south pushes at another power and pushes to its own detriment, because it's pushing against a superior power that will come against the king of the south and crush it, absolutely crush it. Now, just as we've said, the king of the south is radical Islam that's led by Iran. We've been saying this king of the north for 70 years is a German-led European power. And this prophecy indicates and reveals that this Iranian-led power will push at Europe. And this push could take place in the very area of Yemen and the Gulf of Aden, the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, the Suez Canal. This verse shows that Iran has a pushy foreign policy, which it does. It doesn't necessarily care too much that it's going up against a superior power. But let's notice a couple of these verses that follow, because it indicates what part of its strategy is. This is verse 42. "And he shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries. The land of Egypt shall not escape." So this king of the north is encountering this push that's taking place in the area of the Red Sea that we're actually talking about right now, attacks a couple of locations. It attacks Egypt. And then in the next verse, it says this, "But he, the king of the north, shall have power over the treasuries of gold and of silver and of all precious things of Egypt, and the Libyans and Ethiopians shall be at his steps." At his steps means they are going to be eventually overcome by this European power. Now, why is Libya being overpowered by European power in conjunction with this king of the south coming in? Why is Ethiopia? Well, you need to get out a map and you look at these places. Libya is in just below Italy on the other side of the Mediterranean Sea. And then to the east of Libya, you have Egypt. Egypt's going to be aligned with the king of the south, though they aren't right now. They will be. And then below that, you have Sudan leading down to Ethiopia and the countries of Eritrea, Djibouti off the coast of Ethiopia. On the other side of the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, you have Yemen. So all these areas along this Red Sea corridor and southern Mediterranean are distinctly named in this prophecy as being taken over by the king of the north as a result of a push by the king of the south. Why do they need to be taken over? because the king of the South, Iran, has control of them. Why does Iran want control of these nations? To control the Red Sea, the southern Mediterranean. That's why. So when we see Iran firing anti-ship cruise missiles from Yemen into ships or at ships in the Red Sea, we know they're working to establish this strategy. And Daniel told us what the strategy was going to be 2,500 years ago. That's why this is vitally important. This is what Michael C. Gall wrote for the Jerusalem Center of Public Affairs, a think tank in Israel. He said this. This was back in 2014, right as this war between the Houthis and the Yemeni government was starting to increase and intensify before Sana'a was taken, before the capital of Yemen was taken. He wrote this: if the Shia rebels, that is again the Houthis, rebels gain control of the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, Iran can attain a foothold in this sensitive region, giving access to the Red Sea and the Suez Canal, a cause of concern not only for its sworn rivals, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and the Gulf states, but also for Israel and European countries along the Mediterranean. If Iran can get control, if these Shia rebels get control of the capital, of Sana'a, of the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, then that's going to be a very big cause of concern for Europe. And then he writes, Arab commentators in the Gulf have warned in recent years about this Iranian push. They've been pushing. That's his words, not mine. It's also Daniel 11 verse 40 words. They've been pushing to control this area of the Red Sea, to much consternation of the Europeans. See, while it was the United States that was the one attacked by the Iranian proxy this week, it is Europe that has most to lose from the Iranians gaining control of the Red Sea. In order to reach the Mediterranean Sea from the Indian Ocean, where 3.8 billion, a million, sorry, barrels of oil pass per day en route to Europe, they have to travel through the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, the Red Sea, the Suez Canal. That's why it's so important. Nearly 10% of global seaborne oil supplies pass through these gates of the Red Sea. Roughly 20,000 ships pass through the Suez Canal and Bab el-Mandeb Strait every year, 55 a day. 15% of global maritime trade travels through the Red Sea. And where's it traveling to? Yes, some of it's traveling to the United States. But the United States, for at least a time being, it has enough oil itself. But Europe doesn't have that luxury. Now Iran controls, really, getting close to controlling that whole southern portion of the Red Sea. They can virtually close or open the spigot on Middle Eastern oil for Europe, bound for Europe. And Europe really is taking notice. Now, as that promo came on before, I didn't know that was going to happen, but it was talking about Europe's response. There will be people that are coming together even right now to respond to what Iran's doing. They see what Iran's doing in Yemen, just not as an exercise in expanding its power or growing its influence, but as a deliberate attempt to dominate the Red Sea and cut off the Red Sea access point from Europe. This is what Mr. Gerald Flory wrote in this article that I referred to earlier, Mediterranean battle escalating into World War III. I mean, everything that you see right now in Europe, and if you hear about them moving southward to Libya, needing to strengthen African nations, increase their Mediterranean naval presence through a number of different funny names that they call them. Why is Europe moving south through the Mediterranean Sea? Well, they see Iran moving north. They see Iran moving eastward, or westward, sorry. They see Iran trying to take over and control the Red Sea. This is from this article again by Gerald Flory earlier this year. He says, I think there are visionaries in Europe who see the beginning of this prophecy about Ethiopia, Libya, and Egypt allying with or falling to radical Islam. Using a little imagination, they realize that Iran could could control these unstable nations. If that happened, it would be a real problem for Europe because Iran could block European trade through the Suez Canal at will and the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, I would add. While the world is mostly blind to it, and really, looking at the reports today of what at least the American press was so concerned about, whether America was going to get involved in another war, that is such a small point in what's really taking place here. There was no reports on Iran's march across the Middle East and how Iran, you know, wants the power to control the trade through this critical choke point. Gerald Flory continues, while the world is mostly blind to it, some in Europe are waking up to Iran's plans to capture the Mediterranean. The Europeans see the King of the South pushing through this policy, and no doubt they will see it now. I mean, cruise missiles just got fired at an American ship in the Red Sea. They are sitting up and taking notice that they have the most to lose if Iran shuts down this critical sea gate through the Red Sea. And what are they doing about it? Well, they're acting. They're acting. They might not come out and say that they're trying to counter the push of Iran through North Africa and through the Middle East. But that's what they're doing. And they've been doing this. They've been aware of it for about 20 years as well. The same time frame that we've been declaring that Iran is the king of the South. They saw Iran's rise and how it was going to happen. They started working all the way back in the early 90s, getting access points, Germany, to the Adriatic Sea through Slovenia and Croatia. And then in the early 2000s, they started to add southern Mediterranean islands, Malta, Cyprus, to the European Union to control them, to put naval bases on them. And of late, we've seen them set up a proxy government inside Libya and move European naval forces off the coast of Libya to, yes, try and protect from people smuggling across the border into Europe, but also to try and put up a barricade to this march, this Islamist march led by Iran across the Middle East. Now, we don't have time to go through all of that, but you can be fully aware that there are European leaders that know what Iran is up to. Now, we can educate ourselves on these things. We can not be blinded by news reports that don't have good analysis of when events like this take place. You don't need to be blinded or caught off guard. You can go to thetrumpet.com, request this booklet, The King of the South. It will fill you in on all the details regarding these prophecies. And you'll see for just how long we've been saying that it was going to happen. For 25 years, we have been saying that Iran is going to be doing this. And, you know, at the time, probably weren't aware about the Houthis in Yemen and how they were a Shiite group that was aligned with Iran or would be aligned with Iran in the future. We just had Daniel's prophecy to go on. And Gerald Flory wrote that down. And, I mean, we watched the news today and it's happening. It's happening. And you can be aware of it too if you get this booklet requested at thetrumpet.com. Study it, study the prophecies, and you'll see the prophesied end as well and how it isn't all bad news at all. But keep watching Yemen, keep watching as Iran clamps down on the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, and then watch for Europe's response as they increase their presence in Africa, in especially Northern Africa, to try and counter what Iran is doing. It's been good to be with you today, this Friday morning, coming to you again live from Edmond, Oklahoma. This is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on 101.3 KPCG here in Edmond and on the FM dial, and also kpcg.fm online. We will see you next time.